Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Hollywood Casino in Charlestown, West Virginia. March's dining special events include March Mania food and drink packages in the Sportsbook the 21st through the 24th. Details and reservations at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Actor William H. Macy hosts a special screening of Fargo this Thursday night at the Warner Theater in Washington, D.C. He joined me to reflect on his Oscar-nominated role as Jerry Lundegaard, as well as the brilliance of Francis McDormand, Steve Buscemi, and the Coen brothers. Hey, William H. Macy. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on WTOP in D.C.
Well, it's my pleasure. Hello, DC.
Hello. Yeah, we're talking because you're coming for a very special screening of Fargo, one of my all-time favorite movies, and a little Q&A as well. It's going to be at the Warner Theater in DC this Thursday, March 14th, so get your tickets now. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask, did you watch the Oscars last night? What'd you think?
I did not watch them. I was on an airplane. I'm in Pittsburgh right now. My daughter is doing her final play at Carnegie Mellon, so I missed them, but I just went over some of the coverage. Looked like a swell time was had by all.
Yeah, Oppenheimer dominated. And of course, Ryan Gosling singing I'm Just Ken from Barbie was also a highlight of the show. But yeah, it was a nice show. But our segue will be that you were an Oscar nominee for Fargo back in, well, the movie was in 96, but you know, ceremony was in 97. You were up, supporting actor, right? I guess it was lost to Cuba Gooding Jr. for the Jerry Maguire. But there are no winners and losers here. Amazing, amazing role as Jerry Lundegaard. How does this thing at Warner Theater, work? Is it like you screen the movie first and then you talk about it after?
That's exactly it. And they're taking questions from the audience. I saw the film for the first time, really, on a big screen with good sound for the first time, maybe since we made the thing. And it is a magnificent film. I was knocked out. I was really proud to be in it. Everybody is stunning in the thing. Franny just broke my heart yet again. And boy, it's everything from Roger Deakins shooting to the Coen brothers. It's just a brilliant film.
It absolutely is. And I was probably like 12 when it came out. So sadly, I just missed it in theaters. I first saw it on a laser disc. That's taking it back.
But well, that's all right. Yeah.
Man, you're so right. Everything about the movie. And I wanted to ask you about some of the Coen brothers, a bunch of things you just said. But let's start with the Coen brothers, their direction. There's so much symbolic things. I've seen it a million times where, like, you know, not only the Paul Bunyan statue, the axe sort of foreshadowing Buscemi's axe in the wood chipper, all that. But some of my favorite direction actually involves you. There's a scene like when you're in the, the used car salesman shop, you're sort of fudging the numbers and all that stuff with the worn down pencil. They shoot you through the vertical window blinds and they almost look like jail bars. Was that intentional, you think?
Well, I think everything they do is intentional. Yeah. Joel does most of the directing, but Ethan directs too. And Ethan does most of the writing, but Joel writes too. I think that's the way they work. It's really tandem. And the one thing one notices from working with those guys is how prepared they are. They shot the script. There was very little deviation from the script. A little bit of improv on the set, but not much. That scene that you mentioned, I was sitting at the desk there just waiting for them to set up the shot, and I was doodling on the pad, and Ethan came over and looked at it and he said, hey, let's shoot this. And so they got an insert of me doodling on the pad. Other than little things like that, it's It's exactly what they wrote. They're exquisitely prepared.
I just dig all of the imagery and the symbolism of it. There's another one, and maybe you can point this out. Well, A, I want you to point that out to the Warner Theater crowd, the vertical blinds.
Okay.
That's genius.
But
the other one that you're
I'll
in,
credit
there's
you too.
there's like, yeah, thank you. But there's a high angle shot where you're I guess it's like after you try to get your father-in-law to give you the money or whatever, and he passes
in
on
the parking
the deal.
lot.
Yeah, parking lot. And there's like a the like tire tracks almost literally form like a visual crossroads for you because your character's at a crossroads. Do you think, did you ever pick up on that?
I think you might be working a little too hard.
I love it.
It's a magnificent shot, though. I actually have the photographer gave me a still of that shot.
Nice.
I don't know. I think most people, I think most of the good directors put their attention on telling the story clearly and simply and directly. I think we as film folk get into trouble if we start getting too much into symbolism or meaning or that kind of stuff. I think tell the story and let people take from it as they will.
Yes, like staring at a painting for too long. We all derive
meaning.
But the most, well, that's fun on repeat viewings. But like you're saying, the main thing is getting that first time story right. And so I guess
on the other hand, there are no accidents. The purpose of technique is to bring out your subconscious. And so did they choose that shot because it looked like jail bars? I think one could say, yes, they chose that shot. Did they say to themselves, hey, it looks like jail bars? I don't know. But, right. That's what art is. These iconic images come out. And I think sometimes the artist had no idea what he was doing. John Lennon said, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is not about LSD.
There you go. And everyone else takes it and runs with that and infers our own meanings. Well, it's a good point. I noticed it, but maybe it's not even what they were going, or maybe it's subconscious, like you're saying. But well, some more maybe intentional things from that scene is you throwing a temper tantrum with the ice scraper. I mean, that's a fun as hell scene.
Totally. And as I said, it was scripted that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was some version of he loses his fecal material and freaks out in the parking lot. And I'm assuming I can't say shit on the radio.
I'll save it for the podcast, but yeah, on the FM airwaves, I'll go with fecal matter.
Yeah, but that was scripted. Very, very funny.
Yeah.
They're funny guys. Good Lord, they are. And I think one of the things that's so brilliant about the film is that it's really horrifying and funny at the same time. And they treated the violence in it in such a banal manner that it's even more horrifying. One of the things that struck me when I saw it last week was when the wife gets free from the two kidnappers and starts to run. And Steve Buscemi says, no, no. And they stand there and watch and laugh as she tries to escape. I mean,
yeah,
it's so horrifying. It's so cruel.
Yeah. Like staggering around in the snow like a chicken with their head cut off, and they're just laughing at her. And same during with the abduction scene too, with the, it's this almost like Hitchcockian, suspense, and she bursts out of the shower. I don't know, like Psycho or some reverse Psycho or something. But then she's running around with the curtain over her face, and it's kind of comedic too. Like you're saying, they just walk that tightrope of genre. It's wild. And that one scene too of where you're making that, it looks like you're doing like a concerned phone call. Oh my gosh, gee, she got kidnapped. I'm so, and then you're like, oh, operator. And you realize you're just practicing your act like this slimy antagonist. But
a little bit of improv there. I think I suggested it because I knew that I knew the camera was going to come around the corner and catch me. And I said, let me practice a couple. And they like, they're really collaborative kind of guys. They know exactly what they want. And as I said, they're well prepared. But I mean, if anybody has an idea, they'll hear it out.
I love it. I love it. Well, we've given them so much credit, maybe too much credit and symbolic stuff, but you never know. I love the Coens, but I do want you to give you a chance to dish on your co-stars really quick. So Frances McDormand, I mean, she would go on to become one of the rare three-time Best Actress winners because she won for Fargo, Three Billboards, Nomadland. I guess she's only one shy of Katharine Hepburn's record of four. That's insane.
No doubt that she'll do. Oh, she was so adorable in this thing. She just broke my heart yet again.
And don't you think, as Marge Gunderson, sort of the pregnant cop, they sort of swap the gender roles? You know, she like outsmarts some of her male colleagues, DLR plates, and then with her husband Norm too. Like, you know, Norm's the one getting up, making her eggs, and you know, need the prowler needs a jump. Like, do you think that's some of the secret sauce of Fargo and what made it so ahead of its time was like a Clarice Starling a few years earlier? Like, Marge was like a pioneering character.
Well, she really was. But it's not as if they were making up something out of whole cloth. I mean, that's the reality of most working families, and that's what they wrote, and that's what's great about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then I guess just to round out the cast, the two kidnappers, dote on Steve Buscemi, who is really a breakthrough role here, and you get some really fun phone calls with him. I'm not here to debate Gary. And Peter
and
Stormare,
Peter
by the
Stormare.
Way.
Peter Stormare's a serious, he was Ingmar Bergman's Hamlet. He's a serious actor and such a delightful fellow and so frightening in this film.
Yeah, Pancake's House. Best delivery.
Pancake's House. Yeah.
But do you like that? Is that what it works? It's like the ultimate cold blooded straight man with the most talkative Steve Buscemi, like total silence. I'm not going to talk.
They're a great couple. It's really well drawn. And it starts from the very beginning, you know, when they say this is a true story. The names have been changed to protect the innocent, but they've been kept the same to punish the guilty. I mean, it's sort of tongue in cheek. And, you know, a lot of people have gone on to think, oh, it's a real story. And somebody made a film about this Japanese woman who was absolutely obsessed and went to Fargo, North Dakota, looking for that money.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. The buried briefcase in the snow, which I know they homage in the TV series. Wow, that's great. Don't you think part of it too is the theme of it? Just, yes, there's the comedy. Yes, there's the thrills and the horror like we're talking about. But the themes of, you know, that Marge tells him in the end in the cop car, you know, there's more to life than a little money. And, you know, and it's a beautiful day. I don't understand it. And at the end with Norm too, like, you know, just two more months. The final lines are about the baby about to be born.
Oh, it's so sweet. Yeah. To this day, my wife and I say to each other, we're doing pretty well there. Flicka, we're doing pretty well there, Marge. It's just a lovely, lovely script. It's so simple and, as you say, profound at the same time. And it tells a walloping good story, one of the best stories that the brothers have ever told, I think.
I think it might be my favorite. I mean, there's so many. Lebowski is maybe their best straight, full-on comedy. And then No Country for Old Men is probably their best, to me, like drama, thriller. But Fargo, to me, why it elevates to my favorite, it's because it's like got the comedy of a Lebowski, but the drama of a No Country. It's like all in one movie, baby.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
When people come to the Warner Theater and see this on the big screen, talk about how, like, the snowy atmosphere, like, to me, Fargo, no movie better captures a setting of the local accents in the dialogue, the snowy, and then that booming Carter Burwell score. It's goosebumps.
I know. The irony is, I know a bit about Minneapolis, which is where we were based when we shot the thing. I did a season at the Guthrie Theater earlier in my career. And it happens in Minnesota every once in a while. You get a brown January, and that's what we had. So we got up there, and there wasn't any snow. So they immediately started renting all the snow-making equipment that they could. And we were going to spend time around the table rehearsing the thing, but the lads had to keep driving for locations farther and farther north to find snow. And they finally did. And it's such a good production team. They made it work. But normally that time of the year, the snow would be waist high.
Oh, well, did you drive? Were you driving? Was it a Tan Sierra? Tan Sierra. There it is.
Yeah, it's a great film. But you're right, boy, that Roger Deakins' initial thing, the Oldsmobile coming up over that hill and that whiteout. Ah, it's just stunning. There was one scene where after the scraper scene, when I had gotten in the car, it wasn't quite cold enough. So we all drank hot tea so that you could see our breaths. And camera's on my back. And so I took a sip of tea and got my mouth nice and warm. And then I was sort of breathing a little hard, assuming that they would cut that out and put normal breathing in. But they kept it. They kept me going. You can hear me going.
I love it. And nowadays they could digitally paint in the breath. I love the old days back there, you know, or the Jurassic Park, the little ripples in the car on the water cup. Like, I love that they did practical stuff like that for your breath.
That's great. Back in the good old days, I really liked that. If you can do it with off the shelf stuff, that's so much better. Digital, I think sometimes. I think sometimes when you have to figure out how to do it, good comes of it. And if you can do anything you can imagine, I don't know, maybe that's a shortcut to being lazy.
I'm with you. And yes, obviously, you know, the disclaimer, there's a place for it. The CGI, all the world building, we can take this places we can never go. Obviously, all that said, I'm with you. I do miss the practical effects, you know, like the miniature models of a 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's photorealistic. That's why it holds up, if you ask me. But anyway. Well, we mentioned it at the top, so I'd like to wrap it back around. You know, that Oscar night, you know, in Cuba gets the win for, you know, Show Me the Money. But what was it like just even being there and, you know, getting honored in that way for the Jerry Lundegaard character? I mean, that it's an all-timer performance, if you ask me. Climbing out the window in your underwear of the motel, and then you're there on the Oscars. But what was the Oscar night like for you?
Well, it's stunning. Everything you've heard is true. You see all your favorite actors, you see legends there. And you know what? They're real. If you get nominated, if you're in one of the top categories, you get a nomination, that's real. You can take it to the bank that you did a good thing. As to who wins, that's a little bit capricious, but it was, I'll tell you, it was not a good year to get an Oscar nomination because there were a bunch of great films out that year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sling Blade was out that year. Jerry Maguire. I mean, the list goes on and on. It was a great year for films.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And the original Mission Impossible was that year. And
I know.
Mike Leigh's Secrets and Lies and Lars von Trier's Breaking the Waves. And it was just this insane amount of great movies came out that year.
It happens every once in a while. Felicity and I sometimes joke with each other, this would be a good year to get a nomination because not that many good movies out there.
Exactly. I think Trainspotting was that year too. Damn. But hey, can we then officially call it then? Fargo deserved to beat The English Patient. I'm saying it. Best picture.
Yes, I will back you on that.
Exactly. All right.
I mean, he left her in a cave for crying out loud. Well, who does that?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Have her kidnapped at least, right?
Yes. Yes, it's wife abuse.
Exactly. Well, we do have to mention before we go the success of the TV series. I mean, that the legacy of this movie. I mean, maybe MASH is an only other example I can think of a thing that started as a movie and was a hit TV series like this. But man, yeah. Fargo season 5 was so great, and they even called back to the wife kidnapping. They even have a daughter instead of a son named Scotty this time. But what was your take on how well the spinoff has gone?
I think it's great. I watched the whole first season. That was Billy Bob, right?
Oh, he was so, yeah, you just mentioned Sling Blade, but yeah, he was so good in that one.
I thought, man, he should have paid them. He was having so much fun. But I thought that was a fabulous season. Then I've seen bits and pieces of all the other seasons. It's a it's their ripe characters, and it's a ripe part of the country. And yeah, I thought it was a great series.
Yeah. What was Billy Bob's character? Lorne Malvo. He was so...
Is that that name?
Oh. Yeah, the character is so good. And they bring back, like you mentioned, the ice scraper in the snow. Isn't, I think the briefcase factors back in. So.
Oh.
Yeah, it's so good. Oh, I mean, check out some of the other seasons too. It's great stuff. Well, yeah. I really appreciate you taking so much time and going in such depth about Fargo. You know, usually I talk about the person's whole career, but since it's a Fargo screening, thanks for indulging me about so much about one.
That's all right. That's all right. And it's really it was, as I said, it was really a thrill to watch it. I'm so proud to be in a film of such quality.
Absolutely. Final seconds. Is there any other roles that we can reflect on really fast? I know the first one that comes to mind is Boogie Nights, the murder suicide stuff. Shameless, yeah. Of course, Showtime Shameless as Frank Gallagher. You talk about getting nominated a bunch of Emmys. Do you any memories on those two, or I'll open it up to you. And any of your other favorite roles?
I was at a film festival again, State in Maine, written and directed by Dave Mamet. That is a really funny movie. And what else? Shameless, of course, was the chance of a lifetime. I learned a whole lot about acting on that because I got to do it for over a decade. I went to work every day for a long, long time. I loved working with Paul Thomas Anderson. I just love his films. I've done an embarrassing number of films.
Yeah, they probably all run together at this point.
Forgive me for forgetting some of them, but I'm a lucky guy. Absolutely. I've been in some really great films.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm curious, you mentioned David Mamet doing State in Maine. He wrote and directed that one, but I loved his script for The Verdict. I know Sidney Lumet directed it, but
holy moly, great movie. Film. Great movie. Maybe. He got nominated for that.
Oh, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. Yeah. And Paul Newman, gosh, one of the best, one of his most underrated performances, I think, 82.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a good place to leave it. I want to know. So I mentioned Paul Newman. Who of the old, the classic actors, do you have any personal idols? I mean, I know there's so many, but are there any that were a huge, huge influence on yours?
I think I was at a tender and impressionable age when I saw Gene Hackman in The French Connection. And I think that was the most sublime performance I've ever seen. And I really dedicated myself to acting after I saw that. I thought if I could act like Gene Hackman, that would be a good thing. I never got to work with him. Dave did, but I think he's pretty much retired now.
He retired relatively early. I feel like he's got a lot left in the tank, but so many good roles.
Well, I haven't heard from him in a while. If you're listening, Gene, I'm dying to do a film with you.
I'm sure Gene Hackman is listening. Yeah, I mean, Popeye Doyle, unbelievable. And rest in peace, William Friedkin as well. Well, hey, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, brother.
William H. Macy. I hope you do get to work with Gene Hackman. He'll come out of retirement just from this interview.
Well, it's devoutly to be wished for. Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for doing this. Again, everybody, William H. Macy is coming to the Warner Theater in D.C. this Thursday, March 14th for a screening of Fargo. Look for those Joe Bar blinds. See you.
Yeah, see you later, man.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.